ghosts, have they become a cliché? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you today. And I think we're going to have a fabulous show indeed. We're going to talk to someone who is subject to a haunting in their home. We're going to talk all about it. There is a recent book out on the subject. It's called The Hairbrush and the Shoe, A True Ghost Story. And the author of that book, and person who has lived in that home and continues to live in that home, is Jean D. Stanton. She is the author of The Hairbrush and the Shoe, A True Ghost Story. She lives and writes in an 1875 townhouse in Boston's historic Back Bay. Formerly a faculty member at Harvard Business School and the Simmons College Graduate School of Management, her book, Being All Things, profiles women attempting to manage both family and careers. And we're so glad to have her on the program. Jean Stanton, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jim. I've listened to a couple of your episodes this week and enjoyed them enormously.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I particularly enjoyed a program in which you and the woman featured were talking about how relatively minor seeming incidents are just as indicative of paranormal activity as big, dramatic, conventionally ghost-like events, because much of what we experienced was not particularly scary or dramatic or large scale, but nonetheless inexplicable. First of all, I'm from Seattle. I grew up there and only moved to Boston after college. I was raised a Catholic, which left me quite comfortable with the idea of ghosts and the supernatural. It was just something that had been part of my life as a child. I still cling to the idea of a guardian angel. So I didn't have any trouble thinking that possibly we had a ghost. And we, in the late 70s, bought a house in Boston's Back Bay, one of the very, very few left that hadn't been broken up into apartments. It was rather run down, decrepit, dingy, dark, etc. But once I walked into this house with a realtor and went up to the first floor landing, I just said, yes, this is it. And I phoned my husband and told him we had bought a house and would he like to see it. He loves to tell that story. Anyway, this house has proven to be a wonderful home for us. But it's also had some strange features we hadn't anticipated. And the first thing that happened was, as I explain in my book, one morning I was brushing my daughter's hair in the bedroom, and she was about 4 years old, and like all little kids, hated to have her hair brushed. So when the phone rang and I set the brush down on the mantelpiece, she darted out of the room. I was on the phone for approximately 20 seconds, turned back to the mantle, and the brush was gone. And I was pretty mystified by this because I was awfully sure I'd left it there, but I started looking around the room. And like we all do once we've misplaced something, we go back and forth over the same territory, and I had torn the bed apart, looked under the bed, looked all sorts of ridiculous places, but that brush was gone. So I went on my way. Several months later, I was looking for my car keys, and I couldn't find them, and I knew I'd left them. And I said to my husband, I can't find my keys. And he said, so where did you leave them? And I said, I left them right here. And so 6 months after the hairbrush incident, I was looking for our passports because I needed to write down the numbers. I was doing something. And we have a very old, beautiful secretary desk that sits in our bedroom between the windows. And it has one of those slant lids that pulls forward and you open it up and there are all these little cubby holes. And that's where I keep important papers, birth certificates, passports, certain old letters, documents, that kind of thing. I'm the only one who ever opens that desk because it's very fragile. So I went over, I pulled open the lid, and guess what was in there? stuffed way back in a cubbyhole, there was the missing hairbrush. And, you know, it was all the cliches. I was frozen. I got goosebumps. The hair stood up on the back of my neck. I couldn't move for a few minutes. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing because I knew I hadn't put that hairbrush there. How did it get there? No idea. So I realized there was something bizarre going on in the house, and I started paying attention when I was missing things. And, you know, and I might lose an earring or I might misplace a piece of mail, you know, the kind of little things we put down places and then don't remember exactly where we left them. These things would tend to turn up either where I thought I'd left them and had already looked or in a place I might have left them but didn't think I had. And then one day I couldn't find something. And again, my husband said, well, where did you leave it? And I said, that doesn't matter. The ghost took it. And he looked at me like I was crazy. He had a look of total disbelief and also just a tinge of repugnance. He really could see that I was serious and didn't want to believe I was serious. And so I didn't bring it up with him again. But I just started saying when I couldn't find something, I said, okay, the ghost took it. And my little girls, they thought that was hysterical. And every time something went missing, they say, oh, Mom, did the ghost take it? Did the ghost take my gym socks? And so on and so forth. Well, we had recently bought a house in the country that we were using and fixing up for a weekend summer place. And a teacher of my older daughter's was available, and I had him move into the house as a house sitter because we were going on the weekends and we needed someone to look after the place. So soon after he moved in, I'd been at work. My husband was at work and the girls had been at school all day and we were upstairs having dinner, and he came in and he said, thank you for folding my laundry. And I said, what laundry? He said, the laundry I left in the dryer this morning. You folded all up. Thank you. I ran downstairs and I looked, and there on top of the dryer were these neat little piles of socks and shorts and so on. And I went upstairs and I said, I didn't fold your laundry. I haven't been home all day. No one's been home all day. And furthermore, I wouldn't fold your laundry anyway, for heaven's sakes. You know, you can fold your own laundry. So my husband came home right at that point, and he came into the kitchen. And I said, Keith, would you please tell my husband what you just told me? So Keith told about coming home and finding his laundry folded on top of the dryer. And he said, furthermore, he says, I'm sure you have a ghost here, because the dog often comes into the back hall and barks for no seeming reason. And my husband looked at Keith and he said, yes, I think you're right. I think we do have a ghost, because in the morning it hangs out by my side of the bed. And my jaw dropped, because here's my husband, who wouldn't take part in any of my ghost conversation, saying, yeah, I've had an experience. So then my girls started talking and they started telling about their experiences. My daughter, my older daughter, said that she had noises in her room at night. My younger daughter told about how one night she went to bed, turned off the lamp, heard a thump, turned her light back on, and a hairband she had left on her chest was lying next to her, had been somehow moved across the room. So once we had established the fact that the entire family acknowledged the presence of something, things got a little easier in terms of documenting various incidents. So just when we went away for a week on vacation, came back and found that my younger daughter's cast iron bed had been moved out from the wall 10 inches. And I went up and saw it, and the marks in the rug were still there where the bed had been. All of these incidents were relatively benign. I mean, a little inconvenient not to be able to find your keys, but there was nothing really ever malicious.
Now, let me ask you a question, and I think this mm-hmm. is really important to emphasize for folks. prior to this, it doesn't sound like you would have been the kind of person to be a big follower of these kind of matters or necessarily even be a big believer in them. I mean, with your academic background and so forth, it would seem that you're a very logical person. So it sounds like this whole experience was probably something outside the ordinary for you. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely, totally accurate. I had never paid any attention to this kind of thing. I mean, like a lot of people, you say, oh, you're in an old house and, you know, we have a ghost or something. But it's just kind of, it's not something you really think about or believe. I really had never credited ghosts with any kind of activity, never really thought about it. And then we had an incident which forced me to think about it. We were doing some construction, which for the first time involved moving a wall. We were enlarging our bathroom, and we came home one night to find the workmen, these two young guys, waiting for us in back of the house. And normally, you know, they leave at 3 o'clock. This was 4:30 or so. And one of them, Dan, who's a tall guy, 6'5", big lanky guy, said, "We just couldn't leave without telling you what happened today." And he told us how they had been coming back for lunch. He was walking up the stairs and he said, "Something went by me and hissed at me and gave me a really hard shove on the shoulder."
Ooh.
And he was still clearly a little bit shaken by this. And his partner, said, "Yeah, I was behind him and he just stopped short." And I said, "What's the matter?" And he said, when Dan turned around, his face was white as a sheet. And so Dan, again, he sort of demonstrated how he'd been pushed and hissed at. And I said, "Well, gee, that's awful." I said, "How do you feel?" And he said, "Well," he says, "I'm just kind of weirded out. It's an old house. You probably have ghosts. But I just really wanted to tell you because I was really weirded out," as he put it. So after that, I thought, you know, I've got to take this a little more seriously. And I decided that I would investigate the whole idea of ghosts. And I sat down in my office and said, "All right, if we have a ghost, let's figure out what we need to know." First of all, I said, "Are there ghosts?" And secondly, I said, "If there are ghosts, who are they? How do they behave?" And then the third question, of course, was, "If we do have a ghost, who might it be?" And I started, you know, just poking around on the internet, and I went up to the library and got a couple of books, and I learned some very interesting things. And a lot of your listeners may already know these things, but it was all new to me. I fell into this wonderful rabbit hole of the paranormal. I'd never even heard that word before. But the first thing I learned about ghosts, I learned from a book, an early book by a woman named Echo Bodine, who may be familiar to you.
Oh, yes, I interviewed her before, yes.
Yes, well, this was a very early book, very basic, but I learned about the difference between ghosts and spirits, spirits being the soul of live people who they've died and they have moved on. And they return generally only when they've been summoned. Ghosts are the souls of people who have died but have chosen not to move on. And they tend to hang out in locations close to their death. Poltergeists are ghosts who specialize in moving things. They tend to be more mischievous than anything else. So from this, I concluded we had a ghost with poltergeist tendencies. I also learned about the difference between mediums and psychics, and how mediums are people who have these talents, but they really have to work at developing them. And they are the people who can, in fact, learn how to communicate with spirits. And so I decided that I would look into some of these mediums, which I proceeded to do. And I found out that there are a number of famous mediums. And this one woman, I was put into contact. I wasn't put into contact with. A friend gave me a book she had written about her her development as a medium and her subsequent experiences, certain cases she had. This was a woman who's named Rosemary Altea. And a friend gave me a copy of this book. And I was rather relieved when she gave it to me because all the other materials I'd gotten had, you know, rather silly covers with skeletons or little white sheeted Casper the Friendly Ghost. And I hated carrying those around. This book was a very ordinary looking book with a cream colored cover and a very large feather on the front, gray feather with a black tip. Mm. Well, that turned out to be very significant because this represented Rosemary Altea's spirit guide. I think like becoming, you know, an athlete or a musician or anything, these people have to be trained. They go through a period of training and apprenticeship. So when a person like Rosemary or like Echo Bodine discovers they have this sixth sense or talent of clairvoyance or what have you, and choose to develop it, they are generally assigned a spirit guide or a person, either living or someone from the paranormal world, who will train them. And it's a pretty rigorous training. So I was reading how Rosemary Altea was trained and about this spirit guide she eventually acquired named Gray Eagle, who was an Apache chief, and how he would turn up at her bedside every morning and they would work on developing her ability as a medium. And I'm reading at this and I'm thinking, you know, I really am having a problem with this. I think this is pretty silly. I don't believe that this Apache Indian was showing up in this woman's bedroom every morning and teaching her how to be a medium. And I remember writing down on my notes, no, this is, I was trying to take a skeptic's position during all of this.
Right.
And be very thorough. So I said, no, I'm not going to buy this. So that weekend, we went out to our weekend house in the country, and it was late August, and I had a flourishing crop of dahlias, and I knew that they would be badly in need of water. So the minute I got there, I jumped out of the car, and I ran to the corner of the barn where I keep a big rain barrel and a watering can so that I could start ministering to my dahlias. And there, I leaned down to pick up the watering can. There was a feather stuck in the ground. It was not just lying there. It was very purposefully stuck in the ground, pointed up. It was a gray feather with a black tip. And while it wasn't an eagle feather, it was a bit smaller and it was a little mangy looking, it was nonetheless stuck there. And I said, oh my, are the gray eagles of the world trying to tell me that I should take them more seriously? And that was one of those little subtle, funny incidents that you could chalk up to coincidence. But again, these things accumulate and begin to become convincing in their own right. Anyway, I did begin to take these kinds of things seriously and note them as well. Another thing I did while poking around on the internet, one night I came across an entity called the Ghost Club. And this looked promising, particularly since some very prominent people had been associated with it. So I went clicking around and I found out that the Ghost Club was founded in 1862 in London by a group of intellectuals, writers, medical people who had become, like many at that time, very, very disturbed by Darwin's findings and having to come up against the notion that, in fact, there was no God, there was no afterlife, that they were just highly developed pond scum. And this was very, very disconcerting to people. And so this group was formed, included the Archbishop of Canterbury, William James, Charles Dickens, a lot of people of this caliber, and their job, they felt, was to investigate all incidents of any kind of supernatural activity, hoping to find out, in fact, that there was some link to the afterlife, that there was an afterlife, and that, in fact, there was more to life than simply living, dying, and that's the end. So I found out that this club had a website. I went on the website, and I discovered that it still exists.
Is that the Society for Psychical Research?
That's another club with a similar mission, which was founded about the same time. And both of these, both of these organizations still exist. They still have memberships, and they still have ongoing research. And so I scroll down, and I found that I could join the Ghost Club. Anybody can join the Ghost Club. You fill out an application, and you send in a fee of approximately $55, and you're a member. And as a member, I was thrilled to death, because this was very, very low risk entry into a real treasure trove of information about the paranormal. So I joined, and I began receiving their quarterly journal. I was invited to meetings and to on-site investigations. Here we have another one of these odd little coincidences that happens. I had just finished reading Oliver Sacks' book on hallucinations, and Eben Alexander's book on his near-death experience, where he talks about his life as a neurosurgeon, how he almost died as after having an infection. In fact, he was technically dead, and he believes he went to heaven and back. And I'd read both of these books, and I was having problems with both of them. I found that while much of what Oliver Sacks had identified in the way of hallucinatory experiences did in fact seem to account for many people's allegedly paranormal experiences, but not all of them. I really had some problems with some of his findings, and I felt like arguing with him. And the same with Eben Alexander. I said, well, yeah, you say you were dead, but were you really? And a lot of neurologists disputed his contention that he died, went to heaven, and came back. And I'm looking at these two books and trying to assess them and feeling really, really nervous about arguing with a person as well-respected and as venerable as Oliver Sacks, and also with a man who's a practicing neurosurgeon. Can I really, me, with little experience in either area, dispute these men's findings? And I'm sitting at my desk in my office at home, looking at these two books, and I hear a plop. And the mail has just arrived, and it's landed on the floor, having shot through the slot. And I go, and there is a copy of the latest Ghost Club journal. And I open it up, and what do I find? They have reviewed both books. So I'm able to compare my own impressions of Oliver Sacks' books and Eben Alexander's book with the reviewer from the Ghost Club Journal. And that was very helpful, because I found that they tended to dispute Sacks and give the thumbs up to Alexander. And having that kind of reinforcement made me sit down and write a whole chapter about these men's these men's position with respect to the paranormal.
Now, your house, I have a question about your house. Now, in terms of why this was presenting itself to you, do you have any theories on to why this ghost or ghosts wanted to present themselves to you? Because it seemed like they wanted to say, hey, we're here, and make you very aware of it. Any theories as to why?
Well, I developed a theory, and I have to tell you, Jim, I was determined to maintain a very objective, almost skeptical position while I was doing my research. But at the in the end, I concluded that in fact, because of the many, many people who have lived in our house and the possibility that at very least some of their energy is still there, I almost feel like the house welcomed me in, and believe me, I have none of these talents. I am not what they call a sensitive. I tried after visiting a psychic to do what she suggested, and I went around and I sat in various rooms with a pad. I tried to do automatic writing. I slept all night in my daughter's bedroom to see if I could anything happened while I was there. Nothing. But I also would sense things when I would be in practicing the piano. I would feel something moving into the room. When I was sitting at a table out in the main hall, I would hear soft steps on the stairs. So I had really almost a physical sensation of a presence in the house. And I did feel that the house was saying, you know, pay attention to what's going on here. And that's really what I did, was pay attention. I think that's absolutely critical, and it's something I hope readers will take away from my book, that when strange things happen, not to just say, oh, well, that was weird and walk away, but to say, what's going on here, and pay attention.
Indeed, indeed. Now, do you feel that ghosts are residual, like we're seeing like a replay or something, or do you think they're sentient and know what's going on and interact with their environments, or do you think it's a mix of both?
I'd say a mix of both. And I, you know, I would love to have a medium come into the house and walk around and see what they might sense, because I don't have that ability. I'm also nervous, though, about having a medium tell me some things they might think I needed to know or wanted to know. I'm a little nervous about that. But I'm open, actually, to any concepts insofar as how ghosts behave and what might be going on. I feel that there can be real entities. The spirit of a former inhabitant could very well be in our house. Maybe not all the time. Maybe it comes and goes. A psychic I visited told me we had a portal and to be careful about doing anything like using a Ouija board, because I could be attracting all kinds of ghosts from other locations, which seemed kind of absurd to me, but we do have a Ouija board and I have been careful not to touch it. So how these ghosts behave, who they are, what they are, I'm not going to take a position on that, only to be very open about what's possible. And I think we all make assumptions once we think there's a ghost. We think we know what that ghost might do. And I think a lot of the attempts to either photograph or deduce a ghost in some way are based on our assumptions about how a ghost might behave. If it's done this one time, if we sit in the same spot with our camera or our detector, we'll catch it. My feeling is the ghost may not want to be detected, or it may not want for us to think that we know how it's going to behave. One thing I read in Echo Bodine's book was that ghosts, being the spirit of a living person, have very much the same demeanor and personality as they did when they were alive. So if a ghost, for example, in our house was old Dr. Putnam, who was a lovely man apparently and a very well-established and philanthropic physician, he thought I was setting up the camera in the living room so I could catch sight of him as he passed through while I was practicing the piano. I think Dr. Putnam might say, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not going to parade in front of this woman's camera. So I really attribute a range of behaviors to any ghost or spirit that might be present in our house.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I also think sometimes there might be a little trickster element going on. Maybe sometimes the spirits like to have a little fun at our expense. I'm not saying it's in each and every case, but I think sometimes they kind of like to tweak us a bit.
I think you're entirely right about that. In fact, that's why early on I thought it might be, back in Victorian times, even in the early part of the 20th century, Spanish flu and all, you know, there were a lot of deaths. And one person I consulted told me she thought a child had died in the house. And a lot of these things did seem to be, you know, prankish more than anything else. So that's possible. And a lot of poltergeist behavior is thought to be really prankish and originating from children.
Well, it's fascinating. The book is The Hairbrush in the Shoe, A True Ghost Story. We've only scratched the surface. Gene Stanton, where can people find the book if they want to check it out? And they should.
Well, Jim, unfortunately, given where we are right now, they're not going to be able to walk into their local bookstore. But the book can be ordered from Amazon. And you can also try your local bookstore. Order because a number of these stores are mailing things out.
Surely.
It is available. It will be available as of next week, April 21, and it can be pre-ordered.
Excellent. Well, the book again is The Hairbrush and the Shoe, A True Ghost Story. Our guest has been Gene D. Stanton. Gene, thank you for joining us and all the best with the book.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for tuning in to Ghost Insight, and we will talk to you next time, and thank you for listening to the show. Stay safe out there. Bye-bye, everybody.